This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry, and thanks so much for listening. I'm broadcasting live from WDET in Detroit today, and as you'll hear throughout the hour, many great reasons for being in the community of Detroit. Loyal Takeaway listeners here, it's great to be in the Motor City. But we begin with Syria. There are pictures and voices of the violence in Syria, the flames erupting from explosions, car bombs, gunfire in the city of Aleppo, the clips of video showing the violence. You can see them on the internet posted there, like the wails of innocent civilians from behind the walls of suppression in that country. More than 20,000 dead in a year and a half, and that is a conservative estimate. More than 300 people died in a single day last week, and it barely made it into the international headlines. Perhaps 30 people are dead from at least three bomb explosions reported in Aleppo today. Among the targets, a military officers' club in the city. There continues to be no solution to this military stalemate, and Syrians around the world watch and wait, including our good friend Safa Sankari, one of those people watching and waiting here in the studios of WDET in Detroit. Safa, welcome back to the program.
Hi, John.
So you may remember, you may recognize her voice. She's a Syrian-American with relatives in Aleppo, co-founder and president of the Syrian-American Medical Society's Michigan Chapter Foundation. How's everybody doing, Safa?
They're okay. I talked to them recently, actually just yesterday, and the situation is just getting from bad to worse.
And as far as you know, the communication lines and the internet communication is still an option for you?
As of now, it is. It was disconnected for a few weeks, and then it was back, and now it's back, and I've been able to talk to them on Skype just yesterday and a few days, and we keep checking in on them to see how they're doing.
Well, it's great for me to see you in person for the first time. You've been on the program many, many times talking about your own frustrations and your family's frustration in Syria. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. But I want you to sit here, and along with the rest of our listeners, to listen to the situation from the perspective of the United Nations. At the General Assembly at the start of this week, Syria's Foreign Minister Walid al-Malim told those gathered at the General Assembly not to get involved in what he considered to be an internal Syrian matter. Here he is, speaking through an interpreter.
This is blatant interference in the domestic affairs of Syria and the unity of its people and its sovereignty. The Syrian people and only the Syrian people are authorized to choose their own future and the form of their state.
Speaking through an interpreter there, Syrian Foreign Minister Walid al-Malim speaking at the United Nations. And earlier this week, we heard yet another warning from UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon talking about, quote, dire consequences should the Syrian government use chemical weapons against the opposition. Martin Nisursky is a spokesperson for UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. And just before we came on air, I asked him exactly how was the United Nations addressing these concerns.
The Secretary General has written personally to President Assad of Syria to express his concerns and to insist that chemical weapons stocks must be kept safe and secure and obviously should not be used, even if Syria is not a party to the Chemical Weapons Convention. It's one of eight countries that is not a signatory. It still has a moral obligation to keep those stockpiles safe.
If those safeguards are not put in place, or if the Syrian government or Syrian military or even a pro-government militia were to use those chemical weapons against civilians, when the Secretary General says there will be consequences, is he acting on information that the state in the Security Council is likely to change if chemical weapons are used? We've seen again and again votes that were vetoed, that were blocked. Various red lines passing. It seems as though the Syrians can be very comfortable that the Security Council won't do anything here.
Well, obviously, we are delving into the hypothetical here. The use of such weapons would be an outrageous crime with dire consequences, is what the Secretary General said earlier this week on the margins of a meeting actually about the prohibition of chemical weapons. He means the humanitarian consequences. Chemical weapons are terrible things, and they do terrible things to people. And that's primarily what he's talking about.
But Mr. Nisursky,
yes.
you do not want to leave the impression that the Secretary General's chief concern about chemical weapons and his chief message here is that chemical weapons can harm people. And that is the consequence he's talking about. If that's the case, everybody knows that chemical weapons are poisonous.
John, why on earth not? Chemical weapons are weapons of mass destruction that have no place in this world. There is already enough violence, leaving aside this hypothetical. Three car bombs today in Aleppo, dozens of people killed, it would seem. And
indeed, which suggests that this is a bit more than a hypothetical to those individuals who are inside Aleppo. Do you expect the Syrian government to move on Aleppo? There are reports that President Assad has called for the cleansing of the city, which takes us back to Bosnia and Serbia.
Look, the Secretary General met the Foreign Minister of Syria here on Monday and raised again in the strongest possible terms that the continued killings and the massive destruction, that the aerial and artillery attacks that are being committed by the Syrian government, that these need to stop. It's obvious what the international community would like to see, and it's incumbent on everybody in the international community to show collective responsibility so that the non-violent path can be taken and not the dreadful violent path that we are seeing.
I'm certainly sensitive to the sensitivity here on your part as the spokesperson for UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. We're speaking to Martin Nesirki, who is the spokesperson for one of the most important voices of that international community you just evoked. Before we go, what would we call what's going on in Syria right now? Would we call it ethnic cleansing? Would we call it defiance of international authority? Would we call it genocide?
At this point, I don't think it's helpful to place labels on this. What we are seeing is terrible destruction, awful killings, human rights abuses, and what we need to see is a reduction of the violence so that we can move to a political track. The Joint Special Representative, Lakhdar Brahimi, he's the Joint Special Representative of the United Nations and the League of Arab States. He's going to be returning to the region and, in fact, basing himself in Cairo from a few days' time. He intends to, again, speak to many people in the region, including in Syria, including the Syrian leadership, with the aim of trying to move things forward onto a political track. Nobody should underestimate the difficulties of that task, but certainly we are committed to continue to try to push in that direction for the sake of people, many inside the country who are displaced, those who've had to flee the country. We are now approaching winter in the Northern Hemisphere. This makes it even more difficult to look after those people.
We thank you for your time. Martin Nesirki is spokesperson for United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, obviously watching the situation in Syria. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And now we return to Safa Sankari, Syrian-American with relatives in Aleppo, co-founder and president of the Syrian-American Medical Society's Michigan Chapter Foundation right here in the Detroit area. First of all, Safa, your reaction to spokesperson Nesirki, and what are the conversations like in your community?
My first reaction is when he said that about the chemical weapons, that the Syrian regime has a moral obligation as to not to use it. This regime has no morality. You know, if they had morality, they wouldn't be killing children. They wouldn't be killing women. They wouldn't be burning, you know, the city, burning all the old artifacts of the city. Aleppo is one of the oldest inhabited cities in the world. And I was just speaking to my relatives just yesterday. One of the old bazaars, one of the oldest souks of the world, is totally burned and destroyed now. You know, this regime has no morality. For them to say that, oh, they should just expect the regime to use restraint and not use chemical weapons is just, you know, kind of a joke for the people of Syria, because this regime has proven to have no morality. And even as I was speaking to my relatives just yesterday, they were saying, you know, at the beginning of all this, the pro-regime people would always say either Assad or we burn the country. And they said, you know what, they're burning the country because we don't want Assad, but because we don't want him, they're basically destroying the country. And that's exactly what's happening.
So let's talk about a couple of things that are probably pretty sensitive to you and your family. First of all, you're probably very young to see the pictures of what happened when Saddam Hussein used chemical weapons in the city of Halabja. If Assad uses them in Aleppo, what's your fear and what do you speak with your relatives about there?
I mean, I think it's the fear of anyone, you know, afraid for their family. You know, with chemical weapons, there's no escape. And I do kind of remember the Gulf War. I remember the pictures that would come out. And there is definitely a sense of fear with my family members, a sense of not knowing. And the thing is, they don't know where to go. You know, if they leave the country, the situation in Turkey and Jordan is not any better than inside the country. The refugees are not being treated very well. So it's a very terrible situation, and everyone is very frightful of the future.
Are people shocked that the situation is so bad in Syria that people are escaping to Iraq? That was unimaginable in Syria, the idea that you go to Iraq for safety, given what's happened there.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I was speaking with my relatives, my aunt, and she said, never did we ever expect this to happen in Syria. We've always been used to having refugees come to Syria. Iraqi refugees used to come from Lebanon. They would always come. And they said, never did we ever think we would be refugees. We would be seeking help. And, you know, the coin on the other side, basically.
If you were at the debate tonight between Mitt Romney and Barack Obama and could ask a question that was meaningful to you, Syria probably isn't going to come up. What would you ask?
I would ask, you know, when is the U.S. going to come in and stop this killing, this indiscriminate killing of, you know, children, women, elderly? You know, the world just looks on and on. And even now that my relatives, they realize that it's all about the election. My cousin was telling me, you know, is anything going to happen on November 7th after the election? Or should we wait and see, maybe we can expect something? So I would ask them, does it not matter that every day, you know, hundreds of children are being killed, women are being raped, the city, the country is being destroyed, and nothing is being done about it? How long are we going to wait? How many people have to be killed and people become refugees until something is done?
And of course, the question, can anyone, even the U.S., stop what's going on in Syria? That's certainly on the table as well. Safa Sankari, thanks so much. The best of luck to you and your family.
Thank you, John. Nice
Safa Sankari here in the studios of WDET in Detroit, a Syrian American with relatives in Aleppo, co-founder and president of the Syrian American Medical Society's Michigan Chapter Foundation.